My name is Tina Andrew, and you're listening to Cultivating Indigenous Voices, a podcast spotlighting positive influences in and around Native communities. Hello, everyone. And thank you for tuning in to this new podcast show titled Cultivating Indigenous Voices. I'm a local here in Chukchon, aka Tucson, and I'm very excited to be in the studio today with a special guest. Today we'll be discussing the Women's March on Washington that took place on Saturday, January 21st, 2017. Many groups were represented at this historical march, and amongst the thousands was a group of Native women who represented their culture and marched for equality. Hashtag, we are still here. So let's welcome Gabriella Casares Kelly. Gabby was one of many who marched here in Tucson alongside many Indigenous women representing Indigenous voices for equality.
I was the organizer for the Native Women's Group that marched together in the Tucson Women's March on January 21st, 2017. I am a member of the Tsleil-Waututh Nation. I am an educator, a voter, a taxpayer, a mother, a wife, and a concerned inhabitant of the planet Earth.
So before we get any further, if you can just explain, what is the Women's March on Washington?
We're ready to fight, and that's what being there as a woman, it was really important to show that women are going to stand up for themselves. A lot of the issues that the Trump administration has talked about directly affect women and directly affect communities. The Muslim ban or the Muslim registration or, you know, what's happening at Standing Rock. Those are all things that people as a whole do not want. And, you know, he didn't get the popular vote. He got in on technicalities, and the people are not going to go down without a fight. And that's what it was about.
Yes. Well, definitely. Thank you for sharing that. Also, did you help organize the Native Women for Equality group?
Yeah. When I decided that my family, so my husband and my two children, were going to attend the Women's March, I thought, you know, it would be kind of cool to maybe get a group together, see if my sister wants to go, or, you know, maybe some of my cousins and maybe a couple friends. And, you know, I kind of threw it out there. Then I started noticing the people who were liking my Facebook page. I thought, well, you know, I have a traditional dress, and my daughters have traditional dresses, and so does my sister.
Yeah.
So why not just us show up in our traditional dresses? Because we really need to make our presence known as Native women, that we're part of this community.
Yes.
And we have very extreme issues that we need to address, that we need the general public to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And so I talked about it on my Facebook page, and then I talked about it on the Celebrating Autumn Himalayan page. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, there's a group of us, and I was really hoping for maybe about 10, 20 women.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a couple of artists donate some posters, and I had another person, Sarah Mae Williams, she came up with a digital representation of Native women for equality.
Yeah.
And so I made an event page, and it was really just kind of on a whim. I was really just, like I said, hoping for 10 to 20 people. We had over 200 strong.
Wow.
We had 15 nations represented in that group. It was mostly women, but there was men and also children. We had people from all over Arizona, tribal nations representing the Arizona tribes. But then we also had some that were from Alaska. We had Alaska Natives represented. We had, you know, people from Canada represented. So it really forced me to spend some time really thinking about it. And my emphasis had been Native women for equality. But when I started meeting with these Canadian Indigenous, so First Nations, and then these Yaqui Indigenous women, I'm realizing that it needs to change to not Native American, but then to Indigenous. So I actually ended up making a page that is just for Indigenous women for equality, because after everything that happened and marching 200 strong, really, I was meeting women in the Tucson area that I had never met before. Mm-hmm. That, and knowing that I'm already pretty active in the Otham community and mm-hmm. in the Native community here, I was really surprised that I was meeting these women for the first time.
Wow.
But they're feeling the same way that I am in regards to, you know, water rights. Mm-hmm. Water rights is huge, not just in Standing Rock, but here in Tucson. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about poisoned water or Thonathon Nation. High levels of arsenic. We had the contaminated water up in Navajo Nation earlier this year, and then we're constantly talking about the Colorado River and, you know, whatever's happening in California is affecting our water source. So that has been a big issue. Missing and murdered indigenous women. That is an issue that's going on throughout Indian country. There isn't a boundary with that. You know, First Nations in Canada, they're experiencing that. That's actually something that their government has addressed because it's such a huge issue. You know, we're talking about treaty rights. We're talking about land. We're talking about the wall that is here, that they're talking about here, that is on our tribal lands, that impacts us culturally. It impacts us, you know, the way that people treat us, the racism, the discrimination, and then the environmental impact of it all. So a lot of women after the march wanted to get together. We're going to have a get together soon. We're trying to work out the kinks. We had to find a place and all of that. So, but it was really great to be in that space and to have so much support and to have 200 people walking through the streets of Tucson saying we're still here.
That is really awesome. I was super excited to see the numbers and really awesome that you were a part of it and you were able to include the indigenous people's voices. And I've seen some photos online and there was even a video where it did show that you actually got to go up on stage and talk a little bit. So please tell us about the march. What was this experience like for you and your family?
I think every Native knows right off the bat when they're looking particularly Native, which could just be you in a stained t-shirt, could be you wearing your traditional clothes, or it could just have you could just be having a really great hair day. I don't know. You get the attention of all these non-Natives who want to talk to you and tell you about how their 164th Cherokee or, you know, so we got a little of that. We got a little bit of people touching us and things like that. And a lot of people asking us for photos and things like that, which I was not 100% expecting at that point. But it was fine. Everybody was, for the most part, pretty respectful. But what was really energizing was for me to meet these other women that I otherwise would not have met in any other setting. So all of these really great connections were happening before the march, and then we're going down. There's a very distinct group of brown people, beautiful, marching through, you know, talking about water. You know, water is life. We are still here. Keep your tiny hands off of our lands. And, you know, we were having fun with that, as Native people do. You know, we laugh, we love, we're powerful. And what happened was we got to the very end of the march, and at that time we thought there was only 5,000 people there. They had told us there's supposed to be 2,000, and then it was 5,000. And by then we heard, oh, there's 10,000 people here. And my good friend, Coletta Saddleback, she and I used to teach together at Hasha. And it was really an empowering time because no one was really angry. Everybody was laughing. It was such a beautiful time. And we had had a time for prayer right before we got started, and we burned some sage. And, you know, we talked about all of these issues that are impacting our community and how we need to be here. And we need to make our voices known, and we need to make our presence known, because people forget about us, and we're not okay with that. We're not going to let that happen. And so we had tears running down our faces and just feeling powerful, and we marched down and we got to the plaza, which is where they were having a rally. Coletta kept tapping me on the shoulder, Gabby, come on. Come on, Gabby. I was a little overwhelmed. By then, I'm realizing that there's 10,000 people here.
Wow.
Not realizing that there was 15,000 people that showed up in Tucson. And I didn't realize that at the moment, but Coletta was saying, Gabby, we're going to go on stage. And I look around and I can't see anybody. I'm thinking, oh, there's probably somebody who's organizing, who's asking us to be on there. You know, they probably saw our group. but I don't see anybody. And she asked me again. And people are trying to talk to me. We're trying to exchange phone numbers. Yeah. And we're trying to, you know, connect with other people, emails and things like that. So this is really, you know, hectic time. And finally, I just said, fine, I'll lead. Mm-hmm. And she says, you know, go ahead, you lead, and we'll follow. And I don't know who this we is, but I said, okay. I said, okay. And I'm thinking to myself, it's not that easy to just, you can't just walk on stage.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out you can. I wove our way, you know, through the crowd, and nobody stops a woman in a traditional dress and her business braid if you look like you know where you're going. And so we found ourselves at the foot of a little stairway that went up to the stage, and there was a speaker already on there. And mm-hmm. I looked around, and I was hoping to find an organizer.
Yeah.
I didn't see anybody. So I stood there a little longer, and then I just climbed on stage. And people kind of took notice of me and then looked back at the speaker, and I was trying to be really respectful and allow her to finish.
Yeah.
But as soon as she finished, I just walked towards the mic. And then the MC was also walking back to the mic, and she saw me, and she says, hi, can I help you? And I said, would you mind if I said a few words? And she said, she looks at me, she looks me up and down, and she goes, yeah, what's your name? Let me introduce you. And she allowed me to stand in front of what I now know was 15,000 people.
Wow.
And to give my introduction, you know, I introduced myself in the traditional way, and which was really great because there was people who weren't in our group, and I could hear them, Skook Dash!
Awesome.
Which I know is so great. And I'm, you know, I was talking a little bit, and I told them, you know, welcome to Shukshan. And it was a really powerful moment. But I had to be up there to remember and to remind the people, the organizers, I looked at your agenda. I looked to see who your list of speakers were, who your singers and your performers were. And there were no Native women listed on this.
Yes.
There was no Altham women. There was no Yaqui women. There was not even a Native woman in any from any tribe listed on there. And you're on Native land.
Yep, it's true.
In that moment, I think kind of a hush fell on the crowd, and I said, Tucson, we have to do better. And they cheered.
Awesome.
Which is, you know, I said, and the crowd went wild, and they did, and they did. And we talked about all of those things. We talked about, you know, Indigenous people welcoming refugees. Mm-hmm. We talked about how, unless you're a Native, everybody here is a descendant of an immigrant or a refugee. And we've welcomed you and built this nation on that. You know, we need to keep those doors open.
Mm-hmm.
We need to keep that. These lines in the dirt were here before, you know, they crossed us. And so I talked a lot about them needing to include Native people, Native women, Altham needing to come and visit us and see where what our land is looking like. And, you know, knowing that these border walls are being talked about on our lands, and that we want to be included and that we will be included. It was a really great time. And since then, I've actually had a lot of people contacting me by private messenger on Facebook, or I've had a couple of reporters contacting me. And like, how can we do better?
Yes.
You know, Tucson wants to do better. That's want to include, you know, the native community. And, you know, it is really tricky. We don't necessarily want people coming out, getting in people's faces, but, you know, come and take a tour, go to the Desert Rain, go to our museum, you know, relax and, you know, and just remember that we're human beings, you know. It takes time to grow that relationship. You know, so I feel like good things are coming from that. But I spent a lot of time reflecting on that because there's not a lot of people who do want to go out there. I think the term feminism, you know, is a really complicated term.
Yes.
I feel that definitely as this beautiful woman of color, you know, to label myself as a feminist, you know, I am a feminist. However, I also realized that term is more associated with white women. And I don't have the same privileges as a white woman. I'm actually always thinking of the idea of decolonizing feminism, where basically what that means is to include people such as myself who don't fit that same standards in feminism. Because a lot of times feminism overlooks the fact that brown women have even a harder time than white women do.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with privilege. And a lot of times white feminists forget that when they got the right to vote, it would be another 74 years or some, or yeah. so before I would get the right to vote. You know,
mm-hmm.
So we, I think women's suffrage was like 18. Oh, I'm gonna butcher the year. I don't recall. But you know, natives, mm-hmm. men or women, weren't considered U.S. citizens until 1924, and then we weren't. Guaranteed the right to vote until like 1965 and wow, you know, super, things like yes. that. So it doesn't quite apply to us. Like, yeah, yes, yeah, you got the right to vote, but me and my people, we did not. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
you know, I'm always really aware of that. And mm-hmm. I'm really aware of women kind of shying away from that idea of mm-hmm. Native women
mm-hmm.
shying away from that idea of feminism and being a feminist. But, you know, when it comes down to it, all it means is being treated as a human being and being treated with equality and believing in equality,
mm.
and which is why I identify with it and mm-hmm. at the same time don't, just because I don't think that we're all the way there yet.
So in your experiences, what are some ways Native women are being represented in all aspects of equality today?
I don't know. That's a really complicated question. I think that Native women are more visible. I think that's mostly in Native communities, but I also see that outside of there.
Mm-hmm.
I recently did, I was a participant in a women's project on the Tlalnepantla Nation, which mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw. Have you seen?
Yeah, I've seen.
So that was like, we were all given a piece of plyboard that we could design and cut out into whatever shape we wanted. And it was to be a silhouette. And some people took it literally. Some people went really artistic with it. I mean, yeah. just the results are just kind of phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
But for my piece specifically, I had a cutout of a woman in a traditional dress, because I sometimes rock the dress and braids. I yeah. call them business braids when I'm feeling like I need to get things done. Mm-hmm. I'm wearing these cool. two braids for power. And the silhouette was of me with my fist raised to the sky, mm-hmm. In, you know, to symbolize resistance. Yes. We're resisting what's happening. And mm-hmm. so what I did for one side of my board was I found quotes from Native women and Indigenous women. And it was really hard. It was actually really hard. A lot harder than I expected. Women like Wilma Mankiller, she's an absolute hero of mine. Her words are everywhere. You can find her quotes, and they're very powerful. Winona LaDuke. I found some from our more notable women, such as Punkaway Victors. You know, she's a congressperson. But for our local women, women like Vivian Juan Saunders or mm. Ophelia Zepeda, or just even more local women, it was really hard for me to find quotes by them. I realized that that's an issue that we have throughout our nation,
mm-hmm.
that we don't have a lot of printed materials and materials that quote what people say, and we're not using our own knowledge as much as we could be. Mm-hmm. And I think that, of course, is always something that we're going to do in the future, that we are going to one day have that, but right now we don't. And the women that are represented in literature or in our books, in written word, I had Frances Manuel Butt on there, and I really wanted to highlight our local women, yeah. all the women,
mm-hmm.
In addition to into the Indigenous women that I had on there. So to me, I think that yes, there are those Native women who have reached these high instances of equality. And I think I'm seeing more and more, you know, there's more women in places of power. You know, at the institution where I work, majority is women. Majority of the students who attend Tlalnepantla Community College, they're women. I see a lot of really strong women leaders in our nation. And I think, you know, that's a really positive thing. But I think at the same time, you know, we still have high instances of domestic abuse or, like I said, missing and murdered Indigenous women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's an epidemic that's constant. It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely haven't reached that level of equality. The very fact that people feel justified in saying that we should be okay, we should not be raising a fuss for clean water,
yes.
is saying that I don't believe you're human enough to deserve mm. clean water. You know, the complaints that we get for Natives taking scholarships and things like that show that, you know, I don't believe that you deserve this because you're not smart enough, or, you know, these things. I don't feel like overall we're not in that conversation, equality. Mm-hmm. I think it's the United States has ingrained racism and discrimination against Native people so much. It's in popular culture without people even noticing. Mm-hmm. So let's say, for example, I was reading an article yesterday. It was a really great article about these young teenagers who vandalized it's a historically black school. They vandalized it and put swastikas on there. And some of the kids were black. Mm-hmm. Some of them were white. And they were, some of them were writing white power and brown power, and they were just tagging. They were just defacing what they didn't know that it was a historical building. Mm-hmm. And the judge who sentenced them, instead of sending them to jail or having them do things where they're going to have a record and basically they're going to get stuck in the system.
Yeah.
He had them go to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C.
That's interesting.
To learn what a swastika really means and to learn what hate and discrimination is. But in that same article, they casually mention that Dan Snyder, the owner of the Redskins football team, donated $30,000. And that was a positive. When I'm reading this as just your regular, everyday Native, I'm seeing this really great thing about race relations having to do with black kids and white kids and the Holocaust Museum and equality and understanding. And then, boom, there is a racial slur about my people that nobody has even noticed.
Yes.
And people make us feel like we're whiny about it. Mm. Like it's a complaint because, we just need something else to complain about.
Yeah.
But if you pay attention, it's everywhere. And so, you know, I think us, more than anybody else, we're seen as if we're not even here. That we are extinct, that we no longer matter, that we're not part of society, that we have our whole separate thing. Mm-hmm. And here you and I are in a recording studio in the middle of Shukshon, Arizona, where we both live and where we spend our money and where we vote and, you know, where we live our lives.
Yep.
So, you know, I think we have a long way to go as far as reaching equality.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that one because, you know, when you leave your homelands, when you leave the reservation, you go to a city and you meet so many different people, of course, non-natives, you experience that. And I experience that a lot. And it's kind of become routine where even the most educated, doesn't matter whether you have a master's, you could have a PhD, but you still don't understand a native people and their history and their culture, and they're asking questions. I'm happy to answer those questions. It's an opportunity to share and to make known what needs to be recognized, and the more people know, the better. That's just kind of how it has been for me. You know, any opportunity that I have to share, I take it, because that's how important it is in order for us to grow and to keep moving forward and to build and be recognized and respected for what we've done. But yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from, and everything that you just stated, it was totally true. And I'm really happy to have you here today, because I'm really glad that, you know, for those who are listening, will have the opportunity to better understand from a Native point of view. So what are some of the areas of collaboration that currently exist among Indigenous communities when we talk about equality or when we talk about recognition, things like that, especially with what's happening this year, the new administration? There's so many issues going on within Indian country that Native people are becoming more and more resistant and outspoken about those things.
For me, one of the biggest things and one of the biggest downfalls that we have as Native people, or one of the biggest ways in which we feel we have no power, is believing that we don't have a part or role to play in the political voting system. So I am a really huge advocate for voting, for getting registered to vote. For me, when I learned, you know, I read in history books or found out 1924 was the magic year when we became citizens. And, mm-hmm. you know, taking it for granted, I didn't realize that 1924 meant that some people were given citizenship and not all.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that that didn't mean, even if I had the right to vote, that I wouldn't have had the right to register to vote.
Oh, I see.
And I started learning more about just really gross ways in which people in power have kept Native people from voting. Maybe that would be charging them to register. That used to be a thing. Having a literacy test, having to be able to read and write in English, which if you grow up Autumn and all you speak is Autumn Yawk, why would you need to? You can mm-hmm. still understand the concepts. Autumn people, we're smart people.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother was a very, very smart woman, and she was a very avid voter, but she didn't read or write in English. And so she had a translator, which they allowed in the late 70s to allow our elders or anybody who wanted one to have a translator there to translate what was on the proposition. And we would have people who came to the house and would explain things. And, you know, my mom and my grandma and my great uncle, they would debate about it in Autumn.
Wow.
About these things before voting. But when I've learned about all of these ways in which people have made us feel like our vote doesn't count, our vote doesn't matter, that's when I'm like, man, I'm putting these things together. It's like, they don't want us to have this right to vote. And that's why we need it more. Why is that? Why? What are they trying to keep us from? Right now in the state of Arizona, we have two senators, John McCain and Jeff Flake. Both Republican. Neither of them support Oak Flats, which is a piece of land, sacred land,
mm-hmm. yes.
That they could do something. We put these people in power, either by voting or by not voting. We put these people in power, and then we have to go and ask them for help, either to protect something or to pass some legislation, to protect places like this, to protect water. They're supposed to be working for us. But if we're not part of that political system and we let others make those decisions for us, they get in power and then they don't have to answer to us because we don't participate. Same thing with Martha McSally. Same thing. Raul Grijalva has been like a really big advocate, especially for the Tlaloc Nation, mm-hmm. our tribal college. Like he's just really a great stand-up guy. But those are people that we elect and we put into power, and they have the power to do things. They have the power mm-hmm. to stop things. They
yes.
can stop and push for legislation to protect sacred sites or mm-hmm. protect water or things like that. And, you know, we as Native people have been fooled into thinking that our vote doesn't matter. So for me, what I see is if we want our congresspeople to be working for us, we have to show them that the Native vote counts, that there are 21 tribal, federally recognized tribal nations in Arizona alone, and that we can band together and we can come out in big numbers and mm-hmm. vote.
Yes.
And we want to hold them accountable. So if we don't, and if we're passive about it and we do nothing, then they're just going to go to the bigger group that is going to vote for them or,
it's true,
you know, show their power in that way. So that's how I think that we need to show that we care about what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We need to vote. We need to get registered. We need to push it. We need to be there for everything. In 2 years, in the state of Arizona in 2018, they're going to be voting. Jeff Flake's seat is not looking like he's going to stay. I am going to call that now. I'm going to go ahead and say that I think that he could be voted out if he doesn't respond to tribal issues for Native issues.
Mm-hmm.
If he's not responding, then I'm not giving him my vote. And,
yes.
you know, right now I'm not really seeing that. And then also governor in state of Arizona, our governor, you know, hasn't really done a lot for Natives in particular. And that could change also, you know, when things like education bills get passed, it trickles down to our Bureau of Indian Affairs schools on the res. You know, it trickles down to Hashan and to Bobby Kirby High School and Thonotham High School and to the elementary schools. And when they make statewide decisions that, you know, it feels sometimes like, oh, that we don't have any concern with that, doesn't really matter. But then they take our casino money. Mm-hmm. and then they decide how we're going to reinvest it, mm-hmm. and things like that. And
yeah.
you're just like, hey, wait a minute. Did we just get bamboozled?
Yeah.
And a lot of times the answer is yes. And that's because we're voting people. We're voting these people in power who really don't see us as real human beings, who don't believe in inequality, who don't believe that, you know, we're a self-determined nation, and really don't care about our role in Arizona. 21 tribes, though. Come on. Yeah, like, come definitely. On. So that's what I think. And I think that's an opportunity. I think just showing up.
Yes.
Just show up. I've been involved in a lot of these really great organizations just recently. Arizona Welcomes Refugees, Indivisible Southern Arizona, this Women's Project on the Tahnaw Nation. I've even been involved in the planning committee at the Himitaki for their 10-year. And part of that is, no, you don't know what you're getting yourself into. You take a notebook and a pen and you just show up and see what happens and see where it can go. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how I got involved in the Tahnaw Nation's Get Out the Vote mm-hmm. task force and things like that. It's just showing up. I think really great things can happen. You just have to be there and be open-minded and be ready. So I think it's an exciting time. I think in the face of all of this adversity, all this negative things, we're getting blow by blow every single day, there's something, and people are starting to realize mm-hmm. that it's going to affect us on our nation. Border wall, water rights, you know, all of these things, they're trickling down and they're hitting the reservation. And so I think if anything, it's going to inspire people to fight back, and we need to do that in a bunch of ways, but the first thing you can do is just show up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. I think I believe in that very much, and you're right. And we're seeing it already that people are definitely being more vocal about issues because they see the greater effects. It's definitely becoming real. It just got real.
It did. It got real, real fast.
Yeah, for sure.
I think, just as a people, like, we have such a strength. You're like, we're so close to our communities, you mm-hmm. know? Like,
yeah.
we're so close to each other already. And then we have, like, the power of humor and to laugh and to just fight like heck, you know?
Yes.
It's a scary time, but, you know, I still have hope.
Yeah, well, I definitely appreciate you coming out and taking the time to sit with me in the studio and get this interview going. And I believe that the indigenous perspective and voice is very much important, especially here in Tucson. And to have this opportunity to have this podcast, cultivating indigenous voices and making it happen, and I'm really grateful for that. So before we end the interview, let me just ask this one last question.
Sure.
Is there anything else that you would like the listeners to consider as we move forward?
A long time ago, I got to hear Wilma Mankiller speak at a conference that was, it was called We Win, Women Empowering Women for Indigenous Nations. Wow. It was over in Scottsdale. This is probably in 2005 or 2006. But she, among all of the amazing things that she talked about, this day when, you know, she was a principal chief of the Cherokee Nation, and there was a lot of other male chiefs who really didn't want her to be principal chief at the time, but they were getting together, and I don't remember the exact context of what was happening, but they were there at an event, and all of the chiefs were sitting in chairs that were designated for them up on stage, and Wilma Mankiller hadn't been invited, and so she walked through the door as an uninvited guest.
Wow.
And they saw her. It was just, you know, she showed up. She must have found out somehow that this was happening, and she showed up, and they were not happy to see her. And so one of the chiefs says to her, "You can go ahead and take that seat right there." And he waves to a seat that's in the front where the general public is sitting, because all of them are up on this stage. They're all facing the audience. And so she said, "Oh, okay, thank you." And she walked over to that chair, grabbed it, and carried it on stage.
Wow.
And what she said was, you have to make a place for yourself, even when it looks like there isn't a place for you.
Wow.
And that's what we have to do. And that's why we have to go to things like the Women's March. And that's why we have to vote. And that's why we have to stand our ground for the things that are important to us. We have to make a place in this greater society that has forgotten about us, or thinks that we're all living in teepees. We have to make a place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're doing. And so I'm really, thank you for having me here. Mm-hmm. I think what you're doing is really wonderful. And it's just really powerful to see a strong autumn woman sitting behind a microphone, you know, with all this technology at your fingertips, making a place for yourself in a place where there wasn't a place for you. And so I applaud you for that. And thank you for having me here. It's really a humbling and just, God, such an amazing moment.
Well, thank you. I really do appreciate your words. And thank you to all the listeners who took time to sit down and listen in on this amazing woman, Gabriella, and her experience along with others on the Women's March that took place here in Tucson. And I really appreciate, you know, KXEI for opening their doors for someone like myself to bring in the Indigenous voice, and I'm looking forward to this journey myself.
Oh, Sapo.
All right. Sapo. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in.